Happy Tuesday, and welcome to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and my guests this week are two social scientists who are both committed to sharing a new lens, a new perspective in how we can raise children and change our economic system to create a more sustainable, healthy, and productive human experience. I don't know any other way to say it. But you know the saying about the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results, which is a metaphor more than a definition of insanity. But the point is that we continue to try to fix a social system and an economic system that really isn't at its core conducive to creating a sustainable and healthy and actually nurturing system for any human beings and actually any living beings on the planet to survive and to thrive. We continue to try to work within the same system of child rearing and economic indicators and creating of communities. We keep trying to refine these same kind of worn out systems that never bring us any further, any closer to creating a community, a culture, a civilization that creates a culture that is actually sustainable. So my guest today, Dr. Darshan Narvaez, is an author. She's a professor of psychology emerita from the University of Notre Dame. She's the founder of the Evolved Nest, which is an initiative of the nonprofit Kindred World, which is working to advance a wisdom-based, wellness-informed society. Dr. Narvaez also authored the book, The Evolved Nest, which shows how we can restore natural wellness to our families and communities by living in harmony with nature instead of living outside or against the natural world and natural practices. Dr. Rian Eisler is a social systems scientist, a futurist, a cultural historian, an attorney, a consultant, and speaker whose life's work has transformed organizations and policies for people around the world. Dr. Eisler may be best known for her seminal work, The Chalice and the Blade, Our History, Our Future, which led to her being named one of the most influential thinkers of the 20th century, and also led to the founding of the Center for Partnership. Dr. Eisler's most recent book, co-authored with anthropologist Douglas Fry, is Nurturing Our Humanity, How Domination and Partnership Shape Our Brain, Lives, and Future. And this book explores how to construct a more equitable, sustainable, and less violent world based on a system of partnership instead of our current system of domination. And in this conversation with Dr. Eisler and Dr. Narvaez, we kind of explore how both of their worldviews, both of their perspectives on how we can make really, in some ways, subtle changes, how we can not reinvent the wheel or even come up with a brand new, never seen before model for humanity, but actually to return to a model of humanity that was at the heart of human existence for much of history. Our capitalistic, more unsustainable growth model of the human experience is actually quite new in our historical records. And both Dr. Eisler and Dr. Narvaez have found great research to support that actually for human beings, our natural way of gathering and creating community is more based on partnership and working together and creating these supportive nests, as Dr. Narvaez would say, that help everyone to prosper and to thrive instead of being a competitive based winner versus loser, or winner and loser, dominator and oppressed people in the societies that we tend to have created in our more recent history. So that's where we're going today. I loved the conversation. I wanted to share it with you. And you're welcome to be part of the conversation after our show by sending me an email to Elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com or you can listen to our show by visiting kcbx.org and look through our program archives. There's 7 years of shows there to enjoy. Or you can podcast the show wherever it is you find your podcasts, through Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Just search for A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and you'll be able to subscribe and listen at your convenience. You can also send me a message through Facebook and Instagram, The Reluctant Therapist, and I'm happy to engage in that way as well. We're going to take a quick break and come back and begin our conversation right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Mother Divine, oh Mother, Mother Divine, Mother Divine, oh Mother, Mother Divine, rekindle my spirit and weave my soul, I am a golden thread. Reawaken the mystery lying dormant inside of me. Mother Divine, oh my Mother, Mother Divine, Mother Divine, Mother Divine.
So thank you for tuning in to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. My guests today are Darsha Narvaez and Rianne Eisler, both bringing years of experience and expertise into the world of family care, wellness, and promoting a sustainable future where all human beings can thrive. Darsha Narvaez is an evolutionary scientist, author of The Evolved Nest, Nature's Way of Raising Children and Creating Connected Communities, also professor of psychology emerita at Notre Dame University, and co-founder of the Evolved Nest Initiative, which promotes optimal health and well-being, cooperation, and receptive and socio-moral intelligences. Rianne Eisler is a social systems scientist, cultural historian, futurist, and attorney, best known for her internationally known and loved opus, Chalice and the Blade, Our History, Our Future, which also led to a lifetime of work reimagining human relations in her book, Sacred Pleasure, and also in her development and founding of the Center for Partnership Studies. Rianne's most current work is Nurturing Our Humanity, written with Douglas Fry, How Domination and Partnership Shape Our Brains, Lives, and Futures. This book has also followed her Real Wealth of Nations, Creating a Caring Economics, Sacred Pleasure, and her continued work educating others into the importance of changing how we view economies and supporting the care and work of others. Thank you, Darsha and Rianne, for joining me here in the conversation.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
It's a pleasure to be with you again.
So, Rianne, we've had a few conversations about the future of our wellness. And I'm curious how you're feeling about the current environment in which we're living. Are we moving closer to a partnered society or further away?
Well, both are happening. And I think we need to really look at both. But that requires a very different frame from the usual frame, which is to look at it through the lenses of right-left, religious-secular, Eastern-Western, Northern-Southern, capitalist-socialist, which really fragment our consciousness. We inherited all these categories from, if we really think about it, from earlier, more authoritarian and really more violent times, more domination-oriented times. So we need a different frame, and that's the partnership domination social scale. And if we look at what's happening today, we certainly see a regression towards domination, but we also see a lot of movements. In fact, part of the reason for the regression is because of these movements. I mean, think about it for a moment. Let's They're all challenging, actually, the same thing, a tradition of domination. I mean, think of the environmental movement. It's challenging man's once hallowed conquest and dominion, domination over nature. I think of the women's movement. It's challenging, again, the so-called divinely ordained right of men to rule over the women and children in the castles, you know, a military metaphor of their homes. Think of the more recent children's rights movement. Again, it's challenging, you know, spare the rod, spoil the child, spanking, violence. And we're, by the way, having a summit on that. On peace begins at home, and I'd like to talk about that a little later. But think of the women's movement challenging again, you know, the feminist movement challenging the once divinely ordained right of men to rule over women. Think of the really the Enlightenment, which has been much misunderstood, I think. Because, you know, this idea of the conquest of nature goes back way before biblical times, even. And it wasn't the Enlightenment that brought on, I mean, yes, the Enlightenment coincided with much more effective, quote unquote, technologies for the exploitation of nature, but that was there all the time. You know, think of the Romans, for example. I mean, they felled more trees than we can even imagine. So both are happening at the same time. And our job is not to dismantle anything. It is to show that there is a partnership alternative and to work on what I hope we can cover here, on four cornerstones, starting with what Darsha has done so much work on, family and childhood, but also going on to gender, which is the second cornerstone, going on to economics, going on to story and language, and all of these cornerstones really are strategic and they underlie both domination and partnership, but in very different ways.
And I would add into the idea of stories and narrative, that fourth foundation is my position from the mental health care work, because it's all about people coming in and telling their stories and sharing their stories and exploring their narratives. And there is those opportunities with kind of the rising popularity of modern psychotherapy to change those narratives in positive ways. And I guess part of my concern, and we'll circle back around to that, is that the narratives and stories that are being visited within psychotherapy today are not stories that support the partnership model.
What is lacking, I think, is helping people build a better society, a better family. And in this, I agree with you, but I also think it is part of the process of change.
I agree. But I think we were agreeing on the same thing. I think my ongoing challenge with psychotherapy is that it's the institution itself is part of the domination story. And so there's two things that are at odds with each other. The whole institution is about getting people to be able to function within society. Let's get them on a medication. Let's send them back to work. Your ability to be productive is the most important thing. I mean, those are really the tenets of psychotherapy, is getting people back into the system so that they can function. And so that in turn makes the institution itself part of the problem. And so in order for that to change, we'd have to shift what the whole narrative and focus of psychotherapy is, which is how do we help people build a more sustainable, healthy, purposeful life So, Darsha, where do you see us today? Are we moving towards a more nested world, or are we in trouble?
Well, it depends on where you look. So
Okay.
I agree. It's happening in both directions that the at least in the States, the powers that be, the government and such, are moving in the dominator direction, but people within their communities are moving in the more partnership direction. There's so much going on all over the world, too, to re-nest people, and they don't say it that way, but they're, nature connection and learning to bond with your local community members and play and that kind of thing. So I'm optimistic, and that's why I do my work. And what I think is critical, though, which is often overlooked by westernized folks, is that we have to understand the baselines for human child raising, the how to raise a human being. And people just have forgotten that. They don't even know what a thriving human looks like. And so that's where the baseline I use is hunter-gatherer band civilization. We still have a few of those around, and the ethnographers and explorers and others, diarists from the last few hundred years, have documented things. We can call them pre-conquest cultures. We're in the post-conquest world here, where we've been colonized. What we think with all these categorizations and all the inequalities and domination features of how we live. That's not how they live, right? They live as partners with nature, partners with one another. And in terms of mental health, I think it's really important to understand that Maslow didn't quite get the story right on self-actualization, that it actually starts in babyhood. You let that baby, you welcome the baby into the world. And our medical system does not welcome babies. It just manipulates them and actually traumatizes them and misdirects their development from day one, from moment one, if not before. But to really self-actualize, you need to let that baby, that young child, let their inner compass unfold and guide them to wellness. That's what they're aiming for, and they have a gift to offer. But we kind of mess that up and lock them down and shut them up. And I'm sorry, and self-actualization in Indigenous communities, like Native American communities, is all about community actualization. It's living into the future and fostering it, a community that works well for everyone. And we kind of forgot all that stuff, right? We got into the individualism because, in part, I think what happens in babyhood.
And it's interesting because Rianne, part of how we describe you is as a futurist yourself. And so it sounds like you and Darsha have kind of these similar long-term visions of the society that we need to move to. Rianne talks about the four foundations of child rearing and gender and economies and then story and narrative. Darsha, what would you say are the pillars of the evolved nest? What needs to be put into place for the evolved nest to be effective?
Well, there's so many layers. What we focus on are nine components for fostering well-being at all levels. That means physiologically, neurobiologically, socially, morally, all that kind of multiple intelligence is going to come about from soothing perinatal experiences. And they really connect, and their oxytocins, all sorts of systems neurobiologically are shaped right then and establish this a growth orientation. Well, whereas if you stress the baby, which we do instead, you've now established a self-protective survival orientation to life right there in those first minutes after birth. For everybody, we need a welcoming climate, a welcoming social climate where we feel like we can be ourselves, where we feel like we matter, we belong. And then there's play. Part of that welcoming is to be playful and a lot of affectionate touch. And then to have nature immersion and connection so you feel like you are a partner with the natural world where you are. And then having restorative healing practices. Because we get out of line, humans make bad decisions and actions, unlike other animals. how we make choices, and we got to get back in balance relationally and with our own mental and physical health and with the natural world. So those are the nine components that we examine and discuss. Now that's, there's other levels too. We have to change the narratives, right, about who we are as a species. We have to change the structures of society. So the infrastructure, the how we raise one another, how we treat one another is one thing. The structures are what supports the way we treat one another. And then the superstructures, the narratives that we tell one another.
If you're just tuning in, this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist, and my guests today, Darsha Narvaez and Rian Eisler, both icons in their fields. Rian, what is your response to Darsha? Because it sounds like, for me, the restructuring of the social system and the caring economy would be a really great place to put focus in order to make space for other social change.
Well, I think that our economic system is really a problem because whether it's capitalist or socialist, whether it was Marx or Smith, both devalued the work of caring. They called it reproductive rather than productive. And that is the first problem with what we have. The argument between capitalism and socialism is a red herring. It's a distraction. We really need to move to an economic system that gives visibility and value to the quote feminine work of caring and caregiving. So in my book, The Real Wealth of Nations, the subtitle is Creating a Caring Economics. We need to reward that work. And the problem is that for both Smith and Marx, the fathers, quote unquote, of both capitalism and socialism, in their time, the norm was what they perpetuated, which is a hidden system of gendered values. For both of them, the work of caring for people, starting at birth, it was to be done for free by a woman in a male-controlled household. So much so that even by the time that Marx wrote in the 19th century, there were still many jurisdictions in which a woman could not sue for injuries negligently inflicted on her. Only her husband could for loss of her services. And as for the work of caring for nature, there is nothing in either what Smith or Marx wrote. I mean, for both, nature was there to be exploited. Now, this is led to economic systems that leave out the three life-sustaining sectors: the natural economy, the volunteer community economy, and the household economy, which are shunted off to the side as not productive. Doesn't matter how much work is done in them. Right, by parents, by caregivers, by people in the environmental movement, for example. No, and this is then perpetuated by our metrics, by GDP and GNP, so that a tree is not part of GDP. But when it is part of the GDP, when it is a log, in other words, when it's dead. And this is really pathological. But the problem is not capitalism or socialism. The problem is domination economics. So we've got a lot that's being challenged today. This whole system is being challenged. But as I said, we really have to understand the importance of gender in all of this. and rigid gender stereotypes with nothing in between. And of course, the ranking of not only male, but quote, masculine over female and quote, feminine.
Is there any society that currently successfully follows a real economic measure, including care?
Well, there are many so-called alternative economic measures, but none of them really give enough importance to the work of caring. But this said, the contemporary nations that have moved most to the partnership side are, of course, the Nordic nations, Finland, Sweden, Norway, and they have caring policies, and they are not socialists. They have very healthy market economies, thank you. And we don't want to throw out, so to speak, the baby with the bathwater. We need a market. We don't happen to have a free one. And we need government policies, but we need what I call enlightened or partnership government policies. But really, we need to change the reward system. And the fact that the Nordic nations have such a healthy market economy is largely due to their caring policies, paid parental leave, very generous for both mothers and fathers. They have universal health care. I mean, my gosh, that makes so much sense, doesn't it, in terms of everyone's health?
So, Darsha, when you hear this, like the economic piece of it, is part of the nested world or the evolved nesting, I'm not sure how to which term to use, but the nested communities, does that look like then a community where children go off to daycare and mothers go to work? Does that align?
Well, we evolved to raise children, raise humanity in groups. So the ideal economically, I'm not an economist or anything, but would be to allow families to intermingle and to help one another and be, have communal child raising and communal maybe workplaces. You take babies or children to work and just much more flexible and local. The local futures focuses on this too, on local food raising, local manufacturing, local whatever you need, do it here instead of shipping, water bottles or apples across the ocean and not deify capital, money. That we have gotten into the materialism at the expense of being, we are spirit beings too. We have bodies, but we also have spirits, and there's a lot of connecting to do with the natural world, the animistic, the sentient planet we live on. More and more science is showing how very agentic plants are, that all the different kinds of intelligence and the different species around us, and we ignore it because we've gotten caught up in believing it's a dead world out there. And that's how you live your life. You're not really yourself. And so we have a whole bunch of people who are dissociated from themselves, from others, from all the trauma they've experienced. So there's a lot of work to be done, and we need the psychologist to come on and be much more holistic and to focus in on spirit and connectedness. My experience in going to family systems therapy way back is they wanted me to not be codependent, be independent, like you said, individuate. As if that's species normal. It isn't. Species normal is to be interdependent, and to be partnered.
But I want to add something to that, Darsha, because I co-authored an article for an encyclopedia of violence and peace, and I can't remember what it's called. But we found the studies show the following, that it isn't really only having an extended family. The violence in families is about domination, period. And it can be in an extended family just as much as it can be in a nuclear, what we call a nuclear family, that it really depends on where the family, and families don't just spring up in isolation of the subculture or the culture that they're a part of, but where the family falls on the partnership domination scale. Because if it falls in close to the domination model, you're going to have tremendous amounts of violence and ranking of male over female. Starting with that, you accustom children to equate difference with superiority or inferiority, with dominating or being dominated, with being served or serving. So that's why the four cornerstones, because family and childhood and gender and economics and story and language are really foundational to both domination-oriented and partnership-oriented systems.
I would like to add to the gender concern, boys. So we need to also respect boys who aren't getting what they need. They develop more slowly by about 2 years until age 30 or so. Have less built-in resilience than girls, and they are more easily traumatized by social humiliation and such. And I think we're raising boys to be that way, and so they become dominators. They become violent.
Well, we started with the feminist movement to change the status of women, this lower status. But we then understand that you have to also change how masculinity and change these rigid gender stereotypes so that men feeding babies, they're doing the work that was once considered, quote, feminine, right? Only mothers can do it. So that's the partnership trend right there.
If you're just tuning in, this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. My guests today are Dr. Darsha Narvaez and Dr. Rayan Eisler, both authors and social scientists and thought leaders in the direction of family and care and nurturing for the future. We're going to take a quick break and come back and continue this conversation right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
I will never forget your healing hands, my love. Though my heart has stopped, sworn I'd given up. I will never forget your healing hands, my love. You gave me daylight, you gave me sunlight.
So it's interesting, Darsha, that you went to the conversation about the masculine, because when we talk about like the change in economy that needs to happen, and we talk about the change in child rearing and how babies even enter into the world, those are two kind of lofty social changes that have to happen. But I'm wondering if the social change that we really could bring about in two generations is how men are raised in society. And I think one of the more controversial things that I talk about is that most of the child rearing of young men is done by women, and more young men are raised by single women than by intact or families, two-parent families. And so when we look at the challenge of toxic masculinity, or a lot of the terms that we use about how young men, are not engaged or not participating or being left out, a lot of that funnels back to women are the ones that are actually setting up this trajectory towards a domination culture, that in some ways women really aren't the victims of the domination culture. They're the ones that are continuing this societal story. So that feels like the inroad is through the feminine to changing how men are raised. Because I would also argue that, as you said, Darsha, in many ways, men are searching much more for nurturing than women are.
because women by nature are more communal, more centered on relationships. So the men really are the missing link in this partnership story. Both of your thoughts, who wants to start?
Yeah, men are the fragile sex. That's what the data show. But we treat them in as if they're not. And I think when mothers are not supported, and when the cultural narratives are, oh, men, boys shouldn't cry, and man up, and all this stuff, and then mothers are not supported to be nurturing because they don't have parental leave and they've got to get back to work, whatever. The boys are the ones who suffer more. Because they need nurturing for longer. They need more breastfeeding. They need more play. They need more freedom in those early years. They shouldn't be sent to school. Schooling is another matter.
That continues the patriarchal story, right? Isn't that that's the propaganda land of how you're supposed to be?
Well, I think that we're really talking about what about people's worldview. And this is not a matter of men against women or women against men. What you say, Elizabeth, is true, that women have internalized, look at the women in the United States who absolutely kowtow to men, who absolutely feel that gender stereotypes, and there's nothing in between. But that's a matter of worldview, and it's the larger culture. And I think if you really want change, you have to look at the society at large as well as at where you are yourself. It's a constant interaction, and I'm so glad, Darsha, that you brought up men, because masculinity, as defined in a partnership model, includes men's humanity, their capacity for care. And as you point out, in the evolved nest, men can be caregivers and are caregivers. And the men who are today diapering babies and feeding babies get endorphins. They get chemical rewards from of pleasure, which are part of our evolution. Our job is really to stand reality upside. It's now upside down, and we need to stand it right side up.
Right.
I don't know really where we're going sometimes, because people are getting too reliant, too dependent on AI, and they're, we ought to be more frightened of it. And I say that you have every reason to be frightened of AI if it's programmed for domination. Issue is how AI is programmed. And that is a cultural issue, isn't it?
One of the things that you said in one of your talks, Rhiann, is that in societies where women are 40 to 50% of the legislature holding government offices, those are the greatest possibilities for change within society, because we can't change society unless we have power. And in order to have that power, we have to be in positions where we can make social change. So I see that as one area of potential growth with so many young women, getting educated and feeling empowered and wanting to move into places where they can make social change. My concern, though, goes then to the evolved nest, is that aren't many of these young women, and a lot since the second wave of feminism, and again, nothing is all bad or all good, but in many ways, the women who are empowered are just playing out the script of domination. If you look at, many women who are in cabinet positions or government positions now, they're not voicing a story of collaboration or partnership. They're pressing that story of domination. And as you've said, Rhiann, that the solve is not moving from patriarchy to matriarchy, because that's still about domination. But how do we help generations of women move towards partnership and not fall prey to the idea of domination, because I think it's one of the reasons why, what is it, 1 in 4 Gen Z women say they will not have children because they don't want to be trapped at home. And, so many of the millennials are choosing not to get married at all because they want to be able to be on their own. We're not moving statistically towards an evolved nest. It feels like we're moving towards a domination.
We are really in a catch 22 here, and there is a difference between being pronatalist, offering $5,000 to people to have more children, and just that's it, and supporting caring for children. And the caring policies that you see in the Nordic nations, yes, are absolutely connected to the fact that women are 40 to 50% of the legislature. But it's not that simple because of what we have been talking about, how women raise boys, still in many parts of the world, not only the United States. Male supremacy is the norm. So it's all interconnected, and I certainly don't pretend to have all the answers, but I know that there is not really something terribly wrong with not wanting to have children and choosing a different lifestyle. That's part of life. That's part of choice.
I agree with that, but if you look at the statistics, the overpopulation part or climate change is not, it's not really as big a reason as the financial part and also the not wanting the burden of having children. It's not, I don't think they're making these decisions really from,
If we had policies that are more partnership oriented, more caring policies, would have support for mothering and fathering.
Can both of you talk about your visions then for what needs to shift in our child rearing practices?
When leaders today keep talking about peace, what they're focusing on are wars, what they're focusing on is terrorism or crime, but they shunt off as, quote, only domestic violence, right? Violence within the family. Whereas actually, it is in our first 5 years, according to neuroscience, that what children observe or experience really affects nothing less than how our brains develop, and certainly how we feel, how we think, how we act, including how we vote. So we really have to take into account what we know of the importance of not having violence in homes. And the first step is changing the term domestic violence to what it is, family violence, because we are so used to marginalizing anything associated with women and children. So domestic violence gets shunted aside. But once we understand that, we really have to connect the dots, don't we? That if children observe or experience violence, including spanking, in their early family relations, they are going to, and studies show this, my book, Nurturing Our Humanity, has some of these studies of men, for example, who back punitive policies, or women who have identified with the domination system. They tend to come from families where there was violence, where there was, where you blame the child I'm punishing you for your own good. I'm hitting you for your own good. That's absolute nonsense. But this isn't about blaming or shaming anyone. I mean, let's really backtrack a moment. Our parents just went through what their parents were taught and what they were taught, and it's time to interrupt that. So that's what the summit is about. Is to show how, as the United Nations points out, the vast majority of children worldwide live in unsafe environments for them. And that, I mean, you do one thing at a time, right? You change consciousness one step at a time. And if we can get people to think more holistically and connect the dots, that's an important start.
So, Darsha, in the Evolved Nest initiative, where are the steps of change of consciousness that you hope to see?
Well, the Evolved Nest is the first step towards the wellness, honoring our heritage of a wellness pathway. And that's going to lead then to healthy neurobiology, sociality, morality, and a kinship worldview that you are part of Earth. You are here as a partner with others, human and non-human. And then you learn through that pathway how to live regeneratively on Earth. So it's holistic, it's heart-minded. So it's not enough to be thinking intellectually with our intellect and our ego consciousness about what to do, because that's what got us into this pickle. We've got to bring back our holistic sense of being in our bodies here now, in partnership, in relationship with everything around us, and to think with your heart, right? And not with your head, because the head can go off and it's always considered dangerous by the major religions of the world. Because you can start to, detach from relationships and responsibility. So we have to get back into our wholeness. And a lot of adults just didn't get that, encouragement to do that. And actually, regarding machines, I think what we've done is we've given over our wholeness to machines. You raise a child within four walls, a baby in a crib. And when you give them finally an iPad or a screen, and they go, "Oh, it's alive," because everything else around them is dead, because we're supposed to be raised outside, then you get used to screens as being your source of life, which is unfortunately what we're doing right now. So we have to get kids out in social environments, in pleasurable interactions. And what we've done in recent decades is we've neglected all the social spaces in the States. So there's no place to go except to the screen, right? And that's where children are going, adolescents. So there's many, many things to work on. And I tell every professional, wherever you are, you can be nested. You can encourage nestedness. Here are principles. We have a curriculum, learn about it and then apply it. And how do you apply it in your own life? Did you get enough touch today? Did you get enough play today? And figure out ways to improve it tomorrow. So getting back in our bodies, in our whole spirits, and not just in our heads, but integrate it all together, and then be with others and help them do that too.
I feel that that then goes back to my original idea of the linking of the mental health care professions, because that's where that work I would think should be happening. I mean, of course, in homes, we ideally have that our whole community and our family systems, but as Rianne pointed out, not all family systems are safe places. And so here's a role that the mental health care industry really could make a difference, because a lot of that work is about asking people, have you listened today, or have you been listened to, or do you have a mentor, or what is your social support network? Like, the good parts of mental health work, psychotherapy, address all of those whole person issues. And once someone awakens to that possibility, they can't go back to the way things were before. And so that I see as a great link towards possible change. only within a couple generations, because it only takes what 20% of the population changing their mind about a social issue to change social issues. So that partnership of psychotherapy as a business could be also helpful in bringing about that change. My guests today are Darsha Narvaez and Rian Eisler. Rian Eisler has contributed a lifetime of work, beginning with The Chalice and the Blade, and then into partnership studies and sacred pleasure. And her most current book, Nurturing Our Humanity, written with Douglas Fry, How Domination and Partnership Shape Our Brains, Lives, Futures. And then Darsha, your work with the Evolve Nest and moving for optimal health and well-being and cooperation and receptive socio-moral intelligence to create a more sustainable and heart-centered world. Both of these things, I think, are so intertwined. Both of your studies are so intertwined and so linked. I'd like to hear from both of you. What are your hopes moving forward? And I'll start with you, Rian. What do you hope is the legacy or the shift that you see in the next generation?
Well, I would like to see the shift towards a partnership configuration. And that really starts in the family. And that, because that's, or whatever our early environment may be. And I would like people to really focus not only on tactics, because really, the domination systems are trauma factories, starting in families, in economics, in the failure to invest in caring, frankly. That's written big in labeling it feminine rather than human. So I would like people to really focus not only on tactics, which are to put out the fires that are constantly being caused, and the traumas that are constantly being caused by domination systems, which are basically based on fear, you know, as I said, starting with God-fearing and going from there, to really move towards partnership. It all starts with a change in worldview.
Do you think that having universal health care or a universal income would those things help move us?
Yes, I think they would help move us. And I've changed my mind about universal income. I used to, and I wrote about that, I used to link it with caring, but the bureaucracy that it would take to enforce that would be so horrendous that I really think that, I mean, I think people are entitled to health care. Babies are entitled to good health care, not medicalizing and making sure that we fit into the domination system, for goodness sakes. I mean, which is what you're complaining about, Elizabeth. And I hear that loud and clear. I think that what's happening with the dismantling of this latest major global regression to domination comes from a recognition by traumatized people that something that the trajectory that we've been on is not sustainable, really, and that it's going to result in an evolutionary dead end.
Darsha, how about for you? What are your hopes in this initiative and your Evolve Nest and Kinship Worldview initiatives?
Well, the alternative is the wellness promoting pathway that all our ancestors followed until in the last few thousand years. And that centralizes honoring mothers and children. That they're the center of a society, of a community. And we have to remember that. And everyone in that community feels connected all the time. That means you never leave babies alone. You never do things to push them away or push others away. You are always feeling connected, in part because you've got all your intelligences developed. So you feel connected to the natural world. You feel connected to this tree, this creek, this mountain, right? Because you're part of that bio community. We have to understand that when we harm another, the well-being of another, whether human or not, it's an ethical issue. It's a matter, it's irrational actually, because we're all connected, right? And it's really evil. So we are in an evil system right now, and we have to dismantle it piece by piece. And wherever we are in the world, we can do that ourselves or with others and dismantle that and move back to well-being as a central concern, the well-being of children and mothers prime first, and then everyone else too, of course. And that honors everyone's spirit, everyone's well-being.
And so I know that there is a summit that you are a part of. When is that happening?
It's happening on October 29. We're aiming at having about 10,000 people at this summit, I hope, or not.
Word up. Yes, and people can also find your work through the Center for Partnership Studies.
It is now the Center for Partnership Systems.
Thank you.
Wow.
And Darsha, last words then, you get them. How can people become part of the Evolve Nest initiative?
Yes, thank you. Well, we have several tools at evolvenest.org. We have a curriculum on the Evolve Nest that you can download and watch podcasts, read essays, videos, and such. We have a nesting ambassador program that we're launching in the fall for training people on the principles and practices and then applying them, helping them to build tools to apply them wherever they are in the world, in whatever workplace or a life way. And so we also want people to help in various ways that they reach out to us and we respond. So we have other tools too, like 28 days of self-calming, 28 days of nature connection, ecoattachment.dance, based on an experiment that worked, and trying to get people back in their bodies and back calming so they can actually reach out and be relationally attuned to everyone they meet, no matter who they are.
This has been a conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Thank you both, Darsha and Rianne, for spending an hour with me and sharing your wisdom. We need many hours. I enjoy both of you so much. Thank you.
Thank you, thank you.
Thank you.
And you can get more information by visiting kcbx.org or thereluctanttherapist.com. You can send me an email to Elizabeth at thereluctanttherapist.com, and I'm happy to connect you with either of my guests or their work. As always, I appreciate you tuning in and supporting and listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
How many people had to survive so you could arrive? How many people had to survive so you could arrive? How many people had to survive so you could arrive? How many people had to survive? Your beautiful face. How many stories live in you? Ooh, from
survive. So you could arrive. How many people had to survive?